Most people think that when they look in a mirror, they're looking at themselves. It's really not true. If you want to see yourself, look at the people around you. It's counterintuitive on a lot of levels. But the real movement of spiritual development is the realization that you are all that you see. That yourself stares back at you. That the people closest to you are your deepest self. When you look into the eyes of your best friend or the people you live with, the people you're married to, the people you are partnered with, you are looking at you. And how you look at and experience yourself is really how you react to and respond to what you see. If it is your nature to be annoyed by or to reject or to be judgmental of people around you, it is simply a sign that you are reacting to yourself with rejection and dismissal and annoyance. If you do not love the people who are closest to you, you do not love yourself. If you are not open to and deeply sharing with those around you, you are cut off from yourself. Rudy said, and I've repeated it many times, if you want to judge the success of your spiritual life, look to the happiness of the people around you. If the people around you are generally happy, you're doing fine. If the people around you are suffering, unhappy, conflicted, there's something not working in you. It's a hard one to buy because we all want to think we're not our brother's keepers. And in a certain sense, you're not responsible for the people around you. You cannot affect, in the most primary sense, the direction and course and content of their life. But what you can do, and what is essential, is you can accept them deeply. You can accept the people as they are. You can be with people without judging them, without thinking, oh, I would love that person if they did this, if they did that, if they looked this way, if they looked that way. If you can get past that, and you can just be with someone as they are, you will discover that you have just brought them the deepest gift humanly possible. Because even in our best intentions and our desire to help people and to change people and to redirect their lives and to give them the thing that we think they need, all they need is our acceptance, our love, our openness, and our forgiveness and our compassion. Basically, just be with yourself. Be with those who are you. It's a hard lesson because we always want to change the things around us. We want to make them correspond to what makes us feel good ourselves, what makes us feel comfortable. So if somebody isn't making you feel comfortable, you want them to be other. And the struggle for that is really the struggle that you have with you. It's your projection onto them that you're struggling with. And what ultimately makes for true peace in life, real joy in life, is just deeply and lovingly accepting the other. It's a bigger struggle than most people realize. It's so interesting when you sit on a subway or you walk down the street and you look at everybody and you just watch your mind. I like that person, I don't like that person. This person's beautiful, this person's ugly, this person's wonderful, this person's too fat, this person's too thin, this person's got pimples, da 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 da. You're doing this thing all the time, accepting, rejecting, accepting, rejecting. You think it's you're accepting and rejecting them. That's not true. You are accepting and rejecting yourself. Unless you can find this deep, still well of compassion for every soul that passes through your environment, you will be in a state of rejection. And as long as you live in a state of rejection, you will not find truth or peace or joy in your life. What you're looking for is always right in front of you. Always right in front of you. I know there's things in us that say very loudly, I can't accept that person. How could I ever love that person? And you can name 20 people right now as I say that, that you can go, no way. Sometimes they're as close to you as your parents. Sometimes they're the political figures in your life who have opinions and ideas totally alien to you. Sometimes they're people who are long gone from your life. And you know that to be who you are, you have to be in rejection of that person, that principle they represent, that being. And as you reject them, you cut yourself off from you. And as you cut yourself off from you, you close the door on the possibility of true spiritual awakening. Because ultimately, everyone is you. Everyone is you. Believe it or not. The people in your life are who you are. Period. And if you don't like the people in your life, you don't like you. Can you change it? Yeah. Get new people in your life. That's fine. But see what happens when you get them. The same patterns of acceptance and rejection are probably going to be there exactly the way they were with the ones you let go of. The problem is not them, the problem is you. And then they're the ones you can't let go of. You were born into relationship to them. They have enormous power, or you gave birth to them. They're yours. It sounds funny to think that you can enter into relationship with people by doing nothing but loving them, accepting them exactly as they appear, exactly as they are, with all of their faults and all of their limitations and with all of the things that make you crazy. And yet, if you can do that, which takes an act of conscious effort, it really isn't even effort, because you don't have to do anything. It's to do nothing. Don't react, don't judge, don't alter. Just allow. Be with people in the deepest sense, and by that I mean just bring you into the space. I had a very good friend die about a month ago, a little over a month ago. A good friend in the sense that we had known each other for 40 years. We didn't see each other regularly. We'd have lunch a few times a year. We would talk. We shared deeply. We cared about each other deeply. And when he called me to say that he had terminal cancer, it was a really difficult thing to hear. And when I was back in LA, where he lived, I went and saw him, and we had this extraordinary conversation in which we just talked, and which I just expressed love. I knew it was not for me to give a spiritual discourse, although that's my tendency. It was just to be sitting with him and just talk. And we talked about everything, and it was completely beautiful. We had a great day. People came by, they brought lunch, went up to the pool, just sat and talked. And then the next time I was in LA, I called to see how he was doing, and his best friend said, "You better come over to the house." Everyone thought he had a couple of years. He didn't have a couple of years. He had approximately 4 weeks. I called his wife and I said, "Should I come over now? This is really, I know it's delicate." And they said, his wife said, "Come tomorrow morning. He just came back from the hospital. We're starting hospice, and you shouldn't come until tomorrow morning. Let us settle things out." I said, "Fine." I come the next morning, and he is unconscious, lying in a bed in the den. Friends have flown in from all over the country. Some are sitting with him, old friends. And I'm really going, I don't know what to do here. I'm not sure why I'm here. There's so many other people who've known him much better, who are much closer, who really love him as much as I do, but in ways have had much deeper relationships. And I didn't know what my relationship was or why I was there, but I said, "I'm supposed to be here." And I was just there. And he was already unconscious, and so I just held his hand. And I stood next to him, holding his hand for about 2 hours. And people came in and walked out, and at one point someone said, we need to give him a suppository, an aspirin or Tylenol suppository, because he has a fever. And I said, and they asked me if I would do it. And I thought, but nobody else wanted to do it. And I said, "Well, listen, I will do it. But let me say this. He's dying. Giving him a suppository to control a fever at this moment in time is kind of superfluous. Also, the effort made to turn him over in order to do that will be so disturbing to his whole system that it's better not to do that. But I'll do whatever you like." And they thought about it and they said, "Okay, we won't do anything." So he just laid there. And after a few hours, of being around. I touched his chest a little bit. I whispered something in his ear. I just said very simply, God loves you. And then I left. The next morning I got up and I thought, well, what do I do exactly? You know, nobody called me. I haven't heard anything. I just said, well, I'll get in the car. I'll just go back over there. I felt a little intrusive. And I went back to his house and I walk in. And his daughter is walking through the living room. I just walked in myself. And I said, how's Marvin doing? And she said, he died last night. And then she started sobbing and I held her. And I think I was the first person to hold her. And she cried and cried and cried. And then I saw his wife, and she just started crying. And I held her. And I started holding all these people. Just being with them. Just being with them. And then they told me that one of his last words, actually the day before, was that he wanted me to speak at his funeral. And I was like, I was so surprised by that. But I said, okay. And so I did. I spoke at his funeral. And at the funeral, his sister-in-law came over to me and she said, you know, you changed everything. I said, what? She said, when you came in to the house, we were in a state of chaos. No one knew what to do. We were completely thrown. The place was absolutely energetically unstable. And you centered everything. It turned around. And I was shocked by that because I had no sense that I had done anything but show up. I showed up. And I was, from the beginning, I kept wondering, why am I showing up? Who am I? I'm a very peripheral player in this game. But I wasn't a peripheral player because showing up meant everything. Just being there. Meant everything. I had written him a note when he first, he wrote me a note saying that the medicines were not working and he was losing the battle. And I said, I'm going to say one thing to you that I said to a couple of other people who have been in this situation. And it's the only advice I will give you. But that advice is, trust the journey. I really sense that that's what he did, and that that's why he died so quickly. He trusted the journey. He knew that it was time to let go. Here is a person in my life who it was, always there, always good for a wonderful lunch, wonderful dialogue, and yet at the last moment of his life, without understanding my personal purpose, I played a role that was central without knowing it. And that role was to be present with someone. And nobody else was being present. Everyone else in the situation was in a place of fear, of judgment, of planning for the future, of thinking about the past. People were crying about what was. People were worrying about what would be. And all I did was stand still and hold his hand. I didn't really say hardly a thing that meant anything that was important. I didn't give advice, really. Very much. And yet being with somebody in that state can change the course of a life or a death. I say this to you because it's not our personality, it's not our ego, it's not our great talents and our great skills or our great thoughts or our great philosophies or any of that that matters. What matters is being who we are, and in the stillness of who we are, it has enormous, enormous impact on other lives. If you can bring that to everyone in your life, to everyone who is in the room with you, to everybody who is on the street with you, to the person who sleeps in your bed, to the people who went before you, to the people who are still coming up the ladder. It doesn't matter if they're 1 year old, it doesn't matter if they're 80 years old, it just matters that when you are with them, you recognize them as yourself in the most powerful and beautiful way, and you just be present with them, and you will serve them in ways you will never understand. Ever. But you will do it. That's the gift that we bring to ourselves and to others, and that others bring to us. And when we really deeply recognize the truth of who we are, that we are the other, that we are the other environment. When you walk into a room, that room is you. When you put something on a shelf, you're putting something in you. When you get rid of all of your stuff, you're getting rid of you. It's completely living presence. It is absolute manifestation of you. And when you understand that this world is you, that this cosmos is you, that the universe is you, that everything you know is you, that everything you love and hate is you, that you are the complete, absolute expression of everything, this absolute existence, everything that is wonderful about it and everything that's terrible about it is you. And when you completely get that, that's when you become aware of who you really are. Sitting still in meditation is one of the great doorways to that awareness. Sitting still and watching you manifest, not so much in the external space around you, but watching you manifest inside. Watching these thoughts rise up. Watching these feelings run in and take over and explore you, direct you in different places. Watching these tensions in your body, watching the comfort and the discomforts of your existence from a still place within, that's the beginning. That's the beginning of your practice. Once you have become deeply able to accept you sitting still, then you begin to accept you in motion, you as an external space, you as beings walking through existence. You begin to be aware from the stillness of accepting you as a sitting, meditating person into accepting you as an entity that fills the space around you in action, in love and in hostility, in joy and misery, in all of that. It's this extraordinarily real sense of being. It's the soup, the stuff of being that is you. You can only learn this from getting to that still place, to that simple place inside, and then watching it manifest in all of time and space. It's the greatest gift imaginable. If you want to practice spiritual unfolding, if you want to practice spiritual life, practice sitting still, and practice opening to and loving the person and the people around you. That's your practice. 24/7, all day long, all night long, that's your practice. That's the whole of it. Good luck. Any questions? Okay. Okay.
You're asking, or you're describing the process of loving George Bush as much.
Absolutely. I was going to say George Bush, in fact.
And so how, since that sticks in
the mind. Yeah, no, of course. Because, no, we have to, if we don't have enemies, often we don't define ourselves. The people who we hate often make us, we're more aware of who we are by who we hate than who we love. you know, I hate that part of life. I don't, you know, I despise that thing. It's almost more powerful than the ones you are, that you're loving. And when I say love, there's so many gradations to that idea. It's different than I would like to be in bed with that person, or I would like to spend my life walking around with that person. What it is accept that they too are this, that they too have made up your life, that you in some ways are defined by your reaction to what they stand for. And what they stand for, you don't have to love. You just understand and accept that is what is. That George Bush represents a way of living that to you is not the definition of how to live. And that you accept that that's what he represents. You accept that he is a spokesperson for all of that. And that that is a way of defining life as you see it in its best form, is that it doesn't go there. You know, life is an incredible mix of yin and yang, of light and dark, of the worst and the best. And to understand that that's who you are. I mean, you are George Bush. You are not just in reaction to George Bush. You are, if you can begin to let go of being Jeannie and being separate from all of this, just for a little bit, just relax that. And be aware that George Bush is rising up in what is your consciousness, in the world that you embody. That George Bush is part of that drama, and he is an essential part of that drama, because he brings into relief that which is good and wonderful, because now you can see what is not good and wonderful. And he makes that possible. When you draw on your paintings, you have, let's say, areas of shadow and darkness and less than you would call the beauty of part of the painting. You don't look at it as negative. You go, I have to set things aside or apart by using shadow and dark, you know, black and yellow or black and brown or whatever those colors are, to get the beautiful colors to shine through. They need each other. It all needs each other. We need George Bush, and he needs us. And we are all part of this extraordinary amalgamation of reality that is the universe that we know and that is our true self. It is our self. And at some point, spiritually, you begin to go, and then you don't have to go out and embrace George and invite him over for dinner even, but you just go, I understand. I get the place that you represent, the thing you represent in this extraordinary drama that is my life. And you appreciate it rather than hate it. You remain open to the whole, and that openness starts to flood through as a kind of being that will enter into that space. And if you were to sit with George Bush from that perspective, he would somewhere be altered by it. It would touch him. It would touch him because he might expect you to come at him with an enormous amount of animosity and anger. He's sort of, I think, expecting that from a good portion of the American public. If you were to be with him and not give him that, you would begin the freeing of George Bush from being George Bush. That's the love that ultimately is available out there, transforms all of us into something that liberates others and liberates us. And you'll be surprised by so many of the things you discovered, so many of the things that you hate in the world or that you find difficult or painful, that cause you struggle, are really essential parts of the process of unfolding as a being. And when you finally awaken to who you are, you will be grateful to every molecule of what had been. It will all be there as part of this process to show you truth. We're yin and yang. We're never going to be other than that. That's what we are. We are the whole. And that whole has to be what it is to do the dance of life. You want to be part of life, and believe me, hold your breath for 4 minutes and you'll see how much you want to be part of life. You know, we're here for a reason, and that reason is to be alive and to be part of the unbelievable richness of human experience.
Ajahn Chante gives a suggestion, if you know someone like a politician who you dislike strongly, to get their picture and sit with their picture until you can work with them. And Ram Dass, I know, has George Bush's picture.
It's not an active kind of I love what you stand for, exactly, or I even love you as a person, but I deeply accept your truth. I accept how you became who you are. I accept the journey that brings you to your perspective as opposed to my perspective, if you want to see them as dual, and to really be able in some remarkable way to forgive everyone for who they are, so that you can forgive you, if you will, for who you are, because we're all complicated. We're all richly dense beings, full of light and dark. Whether we explore all that is, you know, it's up to you. A lot of people only try to look at parts of themselves, but the whole of us is the full picture of human experience. We are all within George Bush as much as we are Barack Obama or whoever you want to use as your polarities.
My mother's. Turned 85, and she sums it up by saying, "We're all a mixed bag."
Yeah, that's it. No, we are. We're all a mixed bag. And once you really get that, you can allow anything. Not that you accept that there's one thing that is, you know, one is right and one is wrong, and all you can go that there are ways of that you would prefer to live, that you would prefer in your life, that you think are better than others. You can make those judgments if you want, but don't demand it of others. Work with that in yourself and see what's really true in that and what's not true in that. Sometimes we think being a good person all the time is the right thing to do, and sometimes really it's not. Sometimes it's a great denial of our truth to just be good in the face of somebody else's, you know, obstructive behavior. And sometimes it's better to just acknowledge that and just be true with it. And just say, look, this is not acceptable to me. You know, it's very interesting when you do that. It's acceptance, I have to say, this is very important. Acceptance doesn't mean, or surrender doesn't mean, that you become a passive entity. Acceptance and surrender really mean that you open to the requirements in you that say, do this, do that, change this, change that. Much of surrender is to surrender to the resistance to doing what you have to do, to doing what life calls you to do. You know, you are a particular construct, and if life calls you to do this, and you're going, no, 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 you're not accepting your life. You're not accepting yourself. Part of surrender is going, I surrender my weakness. I surrender the fear of moving forward. I surrender my hesitation to accept what's in front of me. That's a big part of this. And a lot of people don't. They think surrender means total passivity and just undisciplined. How can I say? Pardon?
Giving up.
Giving up, yeah. It's not giving up at all. It's not giving up. It's engaging with a deep, deep sense of accepting of what is, accepting what has arisen in your life. You can go, I don't like the fact that this person is in my life. I don't like it. But you go, they are. Now what do I do about it? What do I do about it? How do I live in relationship to that? What's the course that I take? One of the things I find in myself, and I think you probably will find as well, is that you become less emotional about it. You become much clearer. You become much more stable in relationship to the thing. When you're emotional about the thing you don't like, then you create more dislike, more problem. When you're not, when you're very dispassionate about it, you have a very different approach to it. You can really tell somebody, you know, what you just did is hurtful to me, instead of slugging them. It's just a different kind of approach. You're just acknowledging, this is what you did made me feel bad. You know, shrinks go through that all the time with people. That's all you want to do is get to the place of saying, this is what is for me in this moment, and accepting the truth of it rather than saying that didn't really happen, this isn't going to happen. You just take it as it is.
how you get to that place where you know when it's time to take action about something that you're getting a message somehow, that something's not working. You know, how...
Look inside and see if you're resisting it. I mean, what I've been doing recently, which has been so fascinating to me, is just watching how much resistance I have to the second-to-second reality of my life. Mm-hmm. Tiny little resistance, like shouldn't be that way. I don't want that. It should be this, and not allowing the resistance to get in the way. I don't want to get on the treadmill. You know, whatever the thing is, I just go, boy, oh boy, it just keeps coming up, and just relaxing it, letting it go, and it leads to action. It doesn't lead to inaction. Usually, it leads to a kind of action, a certain way of being. It's an active being rather than a passive being. Although there are times where passivity is the right thing, and you can feel the difference. It's what are you resisting? What are you hesitating? What are you pulling back from? And then relaxing that, and then just do it. Just do it. It's so much easier to just do the thing you're resisting, because the resisting takes up more energy than the doing of it. So once you just go, okay, I'll do it, boy, life changes. And there's a lot on the agenda we don't want to do. I know it, and we all have it. There's the stuff we want to do, which is usually like lie down and watch TV. And then there's the stuff which is work. And that's what we resist. And once you stop resisting it, it becomes the stuff of your life. It's the stuff that gives meaning and value to your life. You're doing what life brings. It's really interesting. And again, half of it will be unlikable. But you don't have to like it. You just do it because it's there. And you keep doing and doing and doing, and you really move through so much stuff in life that's waiting for you. You burn up, if you will, the karma of past lives. It's the only way. And if you resist it, you just keep it there in a storehouse of stuff that still has to be worked on. Just keep it going all the time. It comes at you all day long. Just go, yes, 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 yes. It's amazing what happens. Try it. You'll see it changes everything. Anybody else? Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for coming through the snow to be here. I know it was a trek, but I thought nobody would show up. As you have heard, we don't have any bagels today. For a lot of reasons. So in terms of brunch, we will throw together whatever we have downstairs if you're all hungry, and we will feed you from the cupboards. Thanks again for coming.